Well, good morning and welcome to the estimates of Tourism, Culture, Arts and Recreation. And we'll call the meeting to order. And just prior to getting started, I wanted to announce some substitutions. Substituting for a committee member from Placentia St. Mary's is the member for Fortune Bay Cape Lahoon. And substituting for the member for Mount Pearl North is the member for St. George's Humber. And substituting for the member from Buren Grand Bank is the member for Waterford Valley. Just before we start, I don't see anybody, any independent members here this morning, but just in case someone comes in, just wanted to get an agreement from the committee that we would do as we normally did and give them 10 minutes towards the end of the estimates meeting here this morning. Thank you. Just a little bit of housekeeping, just a reminder to our committee members and to certainly the executive of the department that you, you know, when you're identified by the minister or a question comes to you, just identify yourself and your tally, just wait for your tally light to light up and proceed with the with answering your question. Consistent with protocols, the mask must be worn at all time by chamber employees unless they are speaking. Okay, and members are reminded not to adjust their chairs. These chairs have been adjusted specifically to members who use the chairs during the house proceedings. Water coolers are at both ends of the chamber. And we'll get started. So before we do, I'll ask the committee members to identify themselves when their tally light comes on, please.
Glenn Littlejohn, researcher, opposition office.
Craig Party, MHA, District of Bonavista.
Jordan Brown, MHA for Labrador West.
Scott Fleming, researcher, third party caucus.
Sarah East, researcher with GMO.
Scott Reed, MHA, St. George's Humber.
Elvis Loveless, MHA for Fortune Bay, Cape Lahoon.
Tom Osborne, Waterford Valley.
Thank you, and I'll ask the department officials to do the same, please. Thank you.
Bonnie Steele, Departmental Control.
Steve Crocker, Minister of Tourism, Culture, Arts, and Recreation.
Karen Stone, Deputy Minister.
There's no one in the next chair, so we're going to Jerry Osman.
Jerry Osman, ADM. Ben Gardner, ADM, Film, Television, and Recreation.
We're back in the back. All right, thank you. Yes, and we have a virtual participant, and actually that's Carol Ann Gillard.
Hi, Carol Ann Gillard, Assistant Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Carol Ann, and good morning. Okay, I would entertain a motion from the committee members to adopt the minutes of the April 7th meeting, please. So moved by Mr. Loveless, seconded by Jordan Brown. All those in favor? And that's passed. So again, this morning we're considering the estimates for the Department of Tourism, Culture, Arts, and Recreation, and I will ask the clerk to call the first set of subheads, please.
Executive and Support Services, 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive.
Shall 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive carry? Minister Crocker.
There we go. Thank you, Chair. It's great to be here this morning. First of all, before we get into it, I want to
Even before we get to the end of this, I want to thank the staff for the tremendous work they've done preparing our estimates and the amount of work that they've done over the last year in a department that's very much been affected by COVID in its primary industries. So thank you very much to staff. Coming off last week's first Hospitality Newfoundland and Labrador conference in over 2 years, we met a sense of renewed optimism. Marine Atlantic is expecting its best year in 10 years. Our airlines are anticipating selling seat capacity of at least 90% of 2019 capacity during the summer months. Our outfitters and operators are booking packages beyond 2022 into 2023 and 2024. Recognizing how hard COVID-19 has hit the tourism, arts, and culture industry, in this budget we have an additional $20 million of one-time investment to invest in marketing, signage, visitor information infrastructure, a new research strategy, strategic product development initiatives, air access, our arts and culture centres, provincial parks, and our provincial historic sites, and a cultural export strategy through the new Celebrate NL. It is come home year. Our special come home year cultural and economic support programs and active NL programs receive outstanding, innovative applications from all over the province. We received 494 applications under the CEDP program and paid out just over $4.1 million. Of this amount, it's important to note $2 million of which will go directly to pay artists in accordance with the status of the Artist Act. The grant money helped leverage over another $4.3 million. Under Active NL, approximately $1.9 million will fund 266 applicants to develop or upgrade trails and outdoor recreational spaces to encourage healthy, active living. There will be music, theater, film, arts, and cultural celebrations in over 170 communities throughout Newfoundland and Labrador in the coming months. By way of example, we have helped with 75 events with a musical component, more than 100 shows, 3 festivals, 2 dance projects, 20 visual arts events, 2 literary festivals, and 92 community celebrations. Our return on investment is quite high. Aside from COVID-19 years, tourism spending is approximately $1.2 billion each year. Statistics Canada estimates that our cultural industries contribute $445 million to the province's GDP and create 4,800 jobs. I look forward to going through the estimates line by line this morning. And again, thank you very much to the staff of the department for the tremendous work they've done over the past year. It's been challenging, but very rewarding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. 1.1.01 to 1.2.03. MHA Party. And good morning.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning as well. And I echo the Minister's comments on thanking the staff. It's been 2 tumultuous years indeed, and but obviously by what the Minister's written or had read there, then we've seen be coming out of the so-called fog and looking well. It'd be nice to have a copy of that. I know, Minister, that it'll come out in the... in the estimates, but it'll be a period of time for them to do so.
Yeah, MHA Party, we'll make available the binder by stick and any information I have, we'll get over to you guys in forthwith.
Fantastic. Can't ask for any better than that. If we can look at the program funding summary at the start of the budget, in that line, it'll look at the capital expenditures. $100 for executive and support services. We've got $1.3 million for tourism. And then we have the $10 million, I'm assuming, equity stake in the film industry. Is it possible that we can just get a breakdown of what that is? And I know the $100 is not much, but it just beats one's curiosity as to why $100 is showing on the books.
It baited me as well. Yep. When I first seen it, but it's actually a placeholder in a line item. I think it was in the last fiscal year we had some unexpected infrastructure issues at one of the arts and culture centers. And when we went to actually do the improvement, I think the improvement was the soundboards. We didn't have a line item. So what we did this year, in a precautious approach in case there were something else to come up,
so we have a line now.
Okay.
We have an infrastructure line at the Arts and Culture Centers that if there were an unexpected need, we have a heading.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Obviously, to your comment around the $10 million, again, that is our continued commitment to the film and television industry, as was announced in last year's budget, and it's just a continuation of the $10 million equity investment. Tourism and recreation, I'm going to defer to the deputy on that one. I know it'll come clear as we get further into the estimates. I don't have... Do you know what that one is right off the top?
But these usually construction projects or loans or major equipment purchases or...
It'll certainly come out in the capital as we go through the line by line.
Okay. Okay, we can move past.
Yeah.
And before I get but a few general inquiries to start with, I just want to throw out the NASCAR series announcement that came forth. And I know that we're investing, and I'd be amiss if I didn't ask, knowing that we have our cost of living issues and you know, in the district of Bonavista and over the province of the island, and I know that many would question to say, did we do a cost-benefit analysis off this investment? And that's a fair question. Because until you get that answer, you can't formulate your opinion, and you can't be able to direct others as to what the benefit of this would be. Will that come up in today, or can that be presented now?
Not specifically, but I can certainly address it now. We absolutely did.
Yes.
Anytime we take on an event, one of the things we do is look at a cost-benefit analysis. I think, and in this case, we would have done it primarily with Destination St. John's. The event obviously will be a little further out on the Avalon, but the major beneficiary, I guess, in a lot of ways of the week-long events will be St. John's. So we estimate of an investment of approximately $600,000 over the 3 years. We anticipate a return somewhere north of $5 million. I believe that is conservative as at best. And I would also add in here that investment is also into marketing. So in that $600,000 over the next 3 years, it will give us placement on the Pinty series on TSN. So we will be running our ads. So not only is this investment with NASCAR, I guess, an investment in bringing the event here, really it's a marketing investment. So what we'll see is ads during this event of this NASCAR event, and we'll also see ads at the other Pinty series races that are advertised on TSN.
Is it possible to get a copy of that? Is that in paper that the Destination St. John's would have that done?
The cost benefit analysis. What detailed information?
Does sound wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful. But yeah, we can certainly see what we can get you on that. But anytime we would go, there would be correspondence. I'm pretty sure from DSJ on that.
So we'll get to what we have.
Okay, good.
But any event like this, we typically go to to the DMO that would be involved to help with the event.
Good. Thank you very
much. Just anecdotally, just to add to what these events actually bring. So when they first decided they were coming here, they blocked out the Delta. Subsequently, they had to block out another hotel, and now they're moved into their third hotel. So the economic benefit of this, the tax dollars that actually come back, help fund cost of living issues, right? It's tourism dollars. If you look at a tourism industry that brings in $1 billion and you quantify that down to a 15% HST and other spending, tourism is very much a contributor to all of our programs in the province.
Yeah. And just to conclude on that, and I agree wholeheartedly, it's just the fact that when you make a decision on something or you make a stand on something, it's nice to have the information before you to know that you can...
Totally.
You've got the data. Yeah. And it's not always easy to get it, but at least we can get what we have. A few general introductory questions, and I know I put the numbers down from last year as far as the numbers that are employed in the Department of Vacancies and Retirements. So I do have those numbers to compare from last year, but maybe we can provide them this year, Minister?
I'll give you, MHA Party, I'll give you exactly what I have in front of me.
Yep.
So, excuse me. The total staffing component currently is 279. 118 positions are filled. Vacancy positions made of September were 19. Vacancies seasonal, currently will be 142, bearing in fact that we are about to ramp up, so we would bring back our park staff, our provincial historic site staff, our visitor information staff, and so on would start to come back in the coming weeks. Long-term vacancies, we have four. We had 12 retirements. Sorry, my apologies.
That's okay.
Total resignations, end of employment, there were 50. Total new hires, new to government, would be 8. And currently there are 13 weekers, primarily at the Arts and Culture Center.
So I'm assuming we had 289 last year, 279 this year, but I know that your retirements are up, but I'm assuming that these are just pending.
Yes.
These will be filled.
Yeah,
it's not a matter of any change in the
totally.
In the staffing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know the impact of COVID. Has the department done an analysis to find out really what the impact of COVID has been in your department? Is there a figure, and I know we can wildly speculate, and we know that has been a significant impact,
yeah.
But did you ever come up with a figure to know what the impact COVID caused on the...
Sorry, on the industry, you mean?
On the industry, yeah.
Yeah, I you know, we're still, obviously we wouldn't have the final numbers coming out of 2020, calendar year 2022, and obviously certainly not fiscal year 2022, but it was huge. You know, operators report, you know, from being absolutely closed to marginal. I would say 2022 was certainly better than 2021. The recovery is continuing. You know, we're in a much better position currently, I think, than we were even a year ago. And again, much, much better than we were 2 years ago. Looking very optimistic, but I think last year we got back to about 25% of the market. You know, if you look at a $1.12 billion
yeah.
in 2019, I think last year we got back somewhere around the $250 million mark. Interestingly, coming into just how it all worked out, third quarter last year, as from Statistics Canada, our restaurant/hospitality industry had fully recovered in the third quarter. They were actually slightly ahead of 2019 in the third quarter. And again, I would not, you know, trumpet that in front of hospitality operators who had suffered so greatly, but there was a resilience. Once July 1st of last year happened and we opened up to the rest of Canada, there was a resilience, but the industry hasn't fully recovered, and I think it's done quite well, but full recovery is still a ways off. If you talk to the airline industry, which we do on a regular basis, and Destination Canada would tell you full recovery is probably in 24 or 25. But this year, I think we're very strategically positioned to have a very strong year. And I would think, you know, be a leader in the country in recovery.
Yeah. I asked that number because I wonder, you mentioned one quarter, so if you look at a little over $1 billion, say $800 million would be a loss for that year. If you take the totality of COVID and knowing where we're going and project, then I would think that we're looking at multi-billion?
Like industry impact
yes.
over the 2 years? Yeah, it will hit. I would hope it wouldn't hit multi-billion, but the losses will be in a billion. Like, I think that... Yeah, that's very.
Yeah.
I'm very comfortable in saying that the losses over the two years. Yeah, and even beyond, because we're into a third year where stuff hasn't recovered fully. So it would be in the billions.
When I said multi-billion, I was projecting too, because it's going to take a while for it to come.
Totally,
back,
and unfortunately, you'll probably be correct by the time it's all said and done.
Unfortunately, yeah. 1.101.
So.
Can you 1.101 the change of the fluctuation in the salaries there? Wonder if you can comment on that.
The increase reflects the current salary plan for 2022-23, including additional funding for a step increase, and remaining approved wage increases.
Okay, good. Transportation and communications.
Yep.
We see the variation of that, and this is probably going to be generic as we go through.
It is.
The question one would ask is that if you discover that you can do it a little more through Zoom and through the measures of which we had to force to as a result of COVID, will those measures be a factor going forward in our costs in transportation and communication?
I sure hope not. And I say that because as a tourism hospitality minister and representing the industry that I represent, I want people to forget about Zoom. I want people to start traveling again. I think it's important. There's value in traveling. Obviously, we will, take advantage of ways to use Zoom going forward. But I would be not properly representing my industry if I said we should continue to do conferences by Zoom, because we need that industry to come back. One of the concerns right now, if you talk to groups like Destination St. John's and other leaders in hospitality, we have to be out there more than ever right now encouraging the convention industry to actually come back, because it's such a huge industry. If you look at the multi-million-dollar convention center we have in downtown St. John's and the benefits of that, I really hope that people get back to traveling, people get back to, convention in person. So, as a department, yes, we will leverage, we will do Zoom, but we will also encourage people to meet in person.
I wouldn't want to be on the record of saying that I would suggest that conferences would be held by Zoom.
I was just
thinking about your staff travel and you'll be able to reach out. So if you had a meeting with an operator or an MHA in the District of Bonita Vista, quite possibly you can do that by Zoom as opposed to the travel expense that would be to go.
Absolutely.
So thus, if you see the same line figures, you wonder and say whether that will be part or is planned going forward, or whether you see any marginal difference as to what it may be.
I think there will. I think we'll see that forever and a day to some regard, because just on a personal level, I do things now, quite frankly, on Zoom where I didn't know what Zoom was 2 years ago.
Me neither.
Right? So absolutely. And we scrutinize our budgets very closely, I can tell you. But again, I think it's important, and even more so when we move in, because you can never replace the value of in person. I think Zoom is okay, but the idea of that sidebar conversation at the side of the room in the evening does a lot for actually getting business done.
I agree wholeheartedly. In operating accounts, $22,000 increase.
So again, that would be the 22.7. That's a decrease that reflects reflects lower travel costs as a result of COVID, and back to your point a minute ago, virtual meetings and others that were postponed and canceled.
I remind the honorable member that his speaking time has expired. 1.1.01 to 1.2.03, MHA Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously there was an increase in salaries there, significantly over what was budgeted, and we're going to see an increase going forward. What was the rationale for this?
Sorry, MHA, 1.2.01. Okay, so salary line. The increase reflects, and obviously is the salary plan, including the creation of a contractual position for Marble Mountain Corp., and some step increases and additional funding for remaining wage increases.
Okay, so was there, the contract is currently, I guess, ended now for the coming year, because it was, we're looking at 1.1 million and now we're down to 972. I said, is that contract with Marble Mountain, that contractor for Marble Mountain, completed?
No, it's not. That's the CEO of Marble Mountain. And that we will continue that contract into this fiscal year.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. 1.2.02. We budgeted $900,000 for salaries, but we only spent $753,000. How many vacancies were resulted of this?
.02. Line item?
Salaries.
Salaries? One.
Okay. One of them. And we're expecting to replace that individual in the coming year?
Yeah, sure. I'll turn it over to the deputy. When we get into technical questions, I will turn it over to the deputy.
No worries.
Good morning. In our budget estimates book, you'll see a salary line for every division that we have. Throughout the year, we call it dynamic management. So this year, this is a policy position that we know will be vacated. What we're going to do is leave that one vacant for the year, but we're going to add a position under research policy, so it will show up elsewhere, because we've heard from the industry that they want us to do more tourism research. Okay. So you'll see that in a couple of places in the book where there's a greater need in a different division, so the salary dollars and position go there.
Okay, so we're looking at just kind of like shifting around different places. Okay,
yeah.
No worries. all right, and that was that one. No, and that's all my questions for this section right now. Thank you.
Thank you. So is the committee ready for the question? Shall 1.1, I'm sorry, I'll go back to MHA priority, 1.1.01 to 1.2.03, inclusive.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, there was on the active staff complement under executive support, there's a contractual position there, 5555-7990, in your office. Just wondering about that particular individual.
What line was that, sorry?
It was in the salary report, Minister.
The salary report.
Do you have that one?
There was two positions there, Minister. It was executive support was contractual. $137,459. And then under admin support services.
Yeah. No, sorry, it took us a second. There's a Canada Games liaison as we prepare for 2025.
And those would be the two positions. So there's one, admin support services as well as contractual. Another position of $70,916.
Okay, that was the CEO or the chair of Marble Mountain. And this year, that one is reflected in my answer to MHA Brown a second ago.
Okay, that's it.
So that position this year at Marble has been just brought into, because obviously we didn't have the position last year and we funded it through savings. This year we're budgeting it.
Okay, good. Looking at in section 1.202, provincial revenue of last year was $18,900.
Yeah, so that's repayment of petty cash and floats from the provincial parks at the end of the season.
Repayment of petty cash?
Petty cash. So obviously when the parks finished up their year, that's what they would have on hand in petty cash.
Okay. And just clarification on the operating accounts. When you look at the variation that we had, we budgeted from what was revised of last year, that was probably a 25% decrease. So we had 131,000 budgeted and then to 100,000.
Yeah. So just as you know, sir, without going line by line, broadly, it's COVID impacts. It would be. Example, you know, office supplies will be down because there was less people actually physically in the office. There was lower travel costs. So it just really reflects the impacts of I guess a less activity due to COVID.
Yep. And my last question in this section, Chair, would be under you've added the administration support added to estimates this year that category. Just wondered the rationale for doing so, and you just got a placeholder there. I'm assuming the $100 that would be included. That's 1.203, sorry, Minister. I should have started with that. My apologies.
Yeah, I'm easily confused, so.
There's two of us.
1.203?
I think that is a. That's new for estimates this year.
That was the one that I outlined previously, right? That it's a placeholder for in case we need it for purchase of a capital asset.
So when we looked at the program funding summary, you this is it. This is the 100.
This is the $100 that would have been in the
yeah.
Like I guess to your other point, to the other line that I didn't off the top of my head know, it will show up here as well somewhere.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yep.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, MHA Party. So the committee rated for the question, shall 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. Can I get the clerk to call the next set of subheads, please?
Tourism, 2.1.01 to 2.2.02 inclusive.
Shall 2.1.01 to 2.2.02 inclusive carry? MHA Party.
Thank you, Chair. 2.101, I guess when it comes into tourism, a topic that would be on front and center on a lot of people's minds would be the rental car. And I know the economy is lean, I know the rationale for everything, but I know that I think you had stated that we were undertaking measures, the department were, to try to mitigate the lack of rental cars for people booking. I've had an operator in Bonavista who stated that he figured $6,000 is what they've lost because the people that had canceled their accommodation due to the lack of rental cars. So I didn't know if this would be a good time be able to state as to what initiatives we've taken.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been extremely active, and I think you recognize the fact that this is not a Newfoundland and Labrador problem. It's not a Canadian problem. It's at least a North American problem. You only need to drive Chem Mount Road to see there's a shortage of cars. You know, we've met regularly with the industry, and I have to give credit where credit is due. Hospitality Newfoundland and Labrador has really taken the lead on this. Carol Ann and her staff in her division have very much been a part of that with Hospitality Newfoundland and Labrador. Industry is telling us that, you know, they anticipate challenges, but they're not putting anything in availability this year that they don't actually have. So they are still anticipating some, as cars become more and more available, some increase in availability. And there are other initiatives that we're working on that hopefully we'll have more to say in the coming days. But again, those initiatives are being led by thankful that it is, but those initiatives are being led by Hospitality Newfoundland. But it's recognized as a challenge.
Yeah. I'm assuming so. Hospitality Newfoundland and Labrador may have reached out to the dealerships that we would have.
We've turned over every stone or Hospitality Newfoundland and Labrador has. Yeah. And I think, you know, they're making progress. And I would really hope that we'll hear something in the coming days on some of the mitigating measures that they've been taking.
Okay. And I'm assuming the transportation and communication is generic all the way through this this program.
Yeah,
it's just once you ask one.
Yeah, it's just the COVID is the COVID impacts, you know, and this one would reflect, you know, what we haven't been able to do as a department. Normally, you know, we would attend 24 trade shows a year. So, you know, obviously those trade shows weren't happening last year, or they were happening virtually. So this just reflects our ability not to get out and travel.
$3 million increase in purchase services.
Yep. So this will become a theme throughout the estimates now. As I'm sure you would have heard, the $20 million announcement last week in the budget for continued supports for this fiscal year for the industry. This would be one of
of the pieces of that $20 million pie. And this includes some, this includes marketing supports, signage upgrades, and improvements to visitor information center infrastructure. I'm gonna ask the deputy field for you to chime in anytime that if I screw it up or if I miss something, feel free to chime in here.
No, that line.
That's good. Yeah. Can you elaborate a little further on the signage upgrades?
Yeah, so we're working. We announced it. So we're doing new point of entry signs this year at Port of Ask and Argentia, and we plan on continuing that. Quite frankly, our point of entry signs, I would call them boring compared to what I've seen in other jurisdictions in the country. So we're looking at upgrades to our point of entry signs, and we're also looking up at upgrades to our regional destination signage. For example, the Baccaloo, what was called the Baccaloo Trail is called now called the Baccaloo Coastal Drive. So those signs will be replaced. Discovery Trail signs will be updated. So the regional
17
TODs. Yeah, the provincial TODs for our okay. sites and updates to our signs at our visitor information provincial historic sites.
Okay. So almost like a complete overhaul of our signage and all.
Well, the tourism part. We did it last year, actually, with our provincial parks. We rebranded our provincial parks last year. So this is a continuation on that.
Good. And I'm assuming in the binder, Minister, that we get the grants and subsidies? You had $221,000 in the grants and subsidies. And I think last year when we looked at it, I think it was Destination Labrador. Probably had the chunk of that, and then it was the nine visitor.
That's exactly it. It's the DMOs and the
visitor information center.
The regional visitor information center that are not in our inventory.
Okay, good. And can you explain the amount voted there? The federal, nearly $1 million, and the provincial $80,000.
Yeah, that's the revenue. Atlantic Canadian Tourism. Yeah, it's our Atlantic Canadian Tourism Agreement that we signed last year.
$2.102 million. $2.102 million is developing research capacity to support economic development and diversification opportunities. Is it possible to give an example?
I'm sorry.
$2.102 million, sector research.
Oh, okay.
And the heading, Minister, just says developing research capacity to support economic development and diversification opportunities.
Yeah, so one of the commitments this year that we've put forward and there's a piece in here. There's $275,000 from the $20 million budget announcement. I'm looking to a specific, but what we've heard from industry is coming out of COVID, the industry is anticipating a change in the traveler. So we really need to focus right now on understanding who that traveler is, and we're going to really do a strategic review of to make sure that we're marketing to the right tourist.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Was that fair again?
Exit survey.
Right. Yeah. So one of the pieces that we haven't fully completed since 2016 is a full-on exit survey. So we're going to do more regular surveying on a regular basis exit, and we're planning a major exit survey likely in 2023 because it's too late to do an exit survey in 2022. We will do exit survey in 2022, but a very substantial piece next year.
From a layperson's perspective, that's a pretty daunting task because we really know that what we've got to offer, which part of the world that we want to be able to market to. You know, so you may have a UNESCO geopark that opens up on the bottom of the peninsula that all of a sudden is certainly a different clientele than what we've had maybe in the past. So that's a pretty complex task for this
group. And just to lay on to that, coming out of COVID, there's another layer to understanding what it is makes a tourist comfortable. And we feel, but we want to prove it. But we feel very comfortable, what we're hearing from our operators, is that the post-COVID tourist, we will be very attractive to. Wide open, outdoor open space. So we just want to prove it. We want to make sure, and to your point, we want to know who that tourist is and where we're coming from.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that, because I would think that even the people that transferred to bring their families back home, it was a rationale for them coming home to start with. And so I can see that on the on the travel basis as well.
Yeah, we want to make sure that the tourist, that the person that we thought, what we considered to be our target market pre-COVID, is that still our target market? I would argue it is, but I would argue that that target market has grown due to COVID.
It's grown,
Thank you. A reminding member that this speaking time has expired. 2.1.01, 2.2.02, MHA Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a questioner now on after the investment with airports this past year to spur activity, are we going to continue doing investments into increasing our rate of travel or air traffic into the province?
Yeah, so again, there is a in the $20 million that was announced for this fiscal year, there is money there for access. We share the access file with IET, so the money that you would have seen announced recently for the three airports that applied was IET's money. It's great spending someone else's money. absolutely. I have regular calls with the airlines, PAL, Air Canada, WestJet, Swoop, and anybody else who will take my call. We understand that air access is extremely important. We don't have an accidental tourist in this province, so we got to get them here. We'll continue our relationship. I think it's encouraging to see what we've seen this year. We've seen, the entrance of Flair into Deer Lake. Recent conversations with them, they've been successful. They've actually added an additional flight per week. We see Swoop coming in to the province with two routes in Deer Lake, one in St. John's. We see Lynx coming to St. John's. So we're really seeing some new entrants into the market, which bodes well. But it's important, too, that we maintain our relationships with the mainline carriers, being Air Canada and WestJet, and also at the same respecting the authority of the airport authorities to do their work. But no, the airline industry has changed, and it's changed forever in a lot of ways. But and I think as a province, we're very fortunate strategically to have PAL, because PAL can fill in a lot of the voids that are going to be left. And PAL now has interline agreements not only with WestJet, but also with Air Canada. So the strengthened relationship between PAL and Air Canada and PAL and WestJet helps us. And quite frankly, I do recognize the costs of air access. It's challenging, but again, we've seen the new competition from these low-cost carriers.
Yeah.
And in a recent conversation I had with both, I think it was Swoop and Air Canada, they admitted that, I guess, the increase of this new competition is going to actually balance some of the fare costs that you may have seen without the increased competition. But the deputy just supported me quite well. There is in the $20 million, there's 2.7 for air access, season extension, and indigenous tourism.
Okay, nice. Now going to air travel, are we seeing anything from the coming in from the European market or anything like that, or is it mostly going to be within the the Canadian domestic market right now?
So I think it'll be domestic and trans-border this year. Unfortunately, our direct flight to Europe is not returning in 2022. I know St. John's did a very strong effort with Air Canada to bring that back, and I think at one point in time I met with Air Canada, I think it was in November, and they were, it was like that. Then Omicron came along, and they actually said that they wouldn't return the direct flight in 2022.
So I guess it's more of a pause right now than an actual...
Yeah. Absolutely, and that is certainly something that we recognize, and I think as... I think the components of the air industry are important as well, and I think when you see announcements like we did last week with Beta Nord, that will help our link to Europe, because obviously one of the factors in getting those direct flights for Europe has always been the oil industry and rebounding confidence in the oil industry.
So you're looking at like piggybacking, more or less.
Right. So hopefully, as that industry starts to rebound, that will certainly help, I hope, with the air access. Because air access is not just tourists, it's obviously business, and it's a bit of a pie.
Yeah, that's right. Going to this year now, I know you guys put a lot of money into the parks the last 2 years during the COVID times. And have you seen an increase in traffic into the parks significantly since the reinvestments?
Yeah, so our provincial parks, I got a note on there, Shane. Gosh. Parks in 2021 had rebounded, I think, in the revenue number back to 1.2 million in revenue in parks. Down from about, I think, pre-COVID, we were around 1.3 million. So, quite frankly, the actual parks haven't suffered. In 2021, they did. 2022, the parks did rebound. So we've made investments in the parks last year. We'll complete those investments. There's some money in this year's budget to complete the parks. We've bought new playground equipment for all of the parks. So there's some money here this year actually to get that installed. It's accessible equipment. So that's an investment. We've also put new, each park now has a, I want to oversimplify it, like a learning space.
Okay.
We call a campfire space, but we brought learning spaces back into the parks, because one of the things traditionally, our parks are used primarily by residents.
Yeah.
And that's important. It's important in the recreation aspect. And more, there's a niche for our parks, because if you think about our provincial parks, they sort of cater to that more rugged type tourist, the backpacker, the
adventure tourism.
Yeah, right. And I think going forward, strategically, there will be a role for our parks in the non-resident tourism industry, more so than ever when you see that adventure. To your point, the adventure tourism, the person that's going to take a fat tire bike and ride across the province or hike lengths of trail around the province. So, we feel there's a piece of for the provincial parks in our overall marketing program. Perfect. So we'll continue the investment.
That's good to hear. Marble Mountain. Anyone interested?
Without evidence, I would say yes.
Okay.
Marble Mountain has had a very successful season amid the challenges that it's had. Obviously, we had some challenges with operations, and obviously there's still COVID challenges. The Black Mariah cable didn't get installed in this past season. simply around, a lot of those challenges were around COVID, and the people that actually can install that cable had to come, I think, at least from somewhere in the country, maybe somewhere from in the U.S. So challenges around it, but we're very hopeful that we can find somebody to take Marble Mountain and actually turn it into the facility that it can be, because it can be a four-season facility. We're seeing it, you know, our season, you know, I think is about to wrap up from skiing, but we've done some interesting things there this year, and you know, we're going to see the return this summer of for example, weddings at the base of Marble Mountain. So, you know, there are things continuing to happen at Marble Mountain as we search for a buyer.
Perfect. Next section, I think that is. All right. So there is some people, I guess, kicking the tires, looking around, that kind of stuff. But are we looking at any? I know there's, you know, there's an increase here. Are we putting any more investment back into Marble Mountain till we find the right person, the right glove to fit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the worst thing that we could do right now is actually just sort of let Marble Mountain go cold.
Okay.
Because we've seen this past winter what it can do. So, absolutely, we'll continue. I think there's an investment of 1.3, an infrastructure investment this year of 1.3 in Marble Mountain, and there was a similar type investment last year. And unfortunately, a lot of that is catching up on deferred maintenance.
Okay.
But you know, it's important we do it. And look, Marble Mountain has to operate safe.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
First and foremost. So we'll continue to put money in to make sure Marble is safe and attractive. And I've often described the preparation of, you know, the sale or you know, investment in Marble Mountain as if you're going to sell your house or sell your car, you paint the house and you blow up the tires on the car. And that's how we look at Marble Mountain. If we just let it go cold, nobody will ever get a full appreciation for the value of the asset.
Perfect. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you. Remind the honourable member, speaking time has expired. 2.1.01 to 2.2.02 MHA party.
The just back, just a moment on the air access. There is a committee, an air access committee.
You said
IET would be the division that would be leading that, or would?
No. We now have taken the lead on air access. That's one of the advantages, I think, of this new department that now I say that in the same light. I say that we work very closely with IET because they have great expertise. And I know she's not here in person this morning, but Carol Ann actually came from IET, where she was very much involved previously with the air access file. So her and her counterpart at IET, you know, work hand in glove when it comes to air access, and I would say they have a very strong and full appreciation for the industry.
So someone had told me one time unverifiable, and I probably should be very disappointed in repeating it. It was unverifiable, but the greatest shipment or us being shipped out through OceanX are secondhand cars.
Yeah.
And never gave consideration. I wouldn't have guessed it, but I thought that might be quite plausible, knowing the demand for secondhand vehicles that are leaving the province. I'm assuming the variation in the purchase services has probably come home year and part of that $20 million as well, Minister?
It is. It reflects support for the industry as they continue to recover. So we're recognizing the fact that industry is not going to recover. There's still, we're still listening to the industry on some of the additional funding in the $20 million to see, you know, where they make, you know, where that fits their needs. But yes, that's exactly what it would be. It's support for the sector. The $2.7 million is support for the sector.
Okay. Marble Mountain. My colleague mentioned Marble Mountain. I know last year, I think there was might have been $1.2 million in additional cost last year, and I think the decking was discussed last year.
Yep.
So I know you had mentioned the Moriah Cable, and I'm assuming that there are going to be further expenses with making sure that it is in good shape for to maintain our prospects of it being attractive by some outside entity.
Absolutely. I could, yeah. We really... You know, our focus now going into the off season for the mountain, the hill structure, would be to, get the lifts back in operation. Just interesting. I just throw this fact in. The last full season we would have had was 18-19, and revenue in 18-19 was $2.8 million. And revenue to date in 21-22, if I'm reading this correct, no, I'm sorry, my apologies. Revenue in 18-19 was $3.2 million, and revenue in 21-22 to date, the date being April 2nd of these numbers, was $2.8 million. So it goes to show what Marble Mountain, the potential of Marble Mountain, it's almost fully recovered. And from pre-pandemic.
Yeah, last year the DM had stated that they were doing a new analysis, I think, of what the value of the Marble Mountain was for the West Coast.
Yeah.
He had some old data that he was going to supply, I think, but they were going to do a new analysis of seeing what the significance is. Is that new analysis underway?
We'll be able to complete that now when we complete a full season, what would be a regular season, and as you can tell from those numbers, you know, back to a revenue of 2.8, you can quickly derive from that how many hotels and how many rooms and how many businesses in that region actually benefit from Marble Mountain.
Oh yeah. $2.201 Pibby Park Commission. Seems pretty all straightforward, but last year we saw a cut of or a reduction of $12,000, and the comment last year was 7,100 of that was attrition. But I noticed that we quickly, in estimates, saw that we spent 29,000 more than we estimated.
I'm going off on tabs. Okay.
2.201.
2.201.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's
Just wondering what caused that increase and why the fluctuation.
It was negotiated wage increases, and it was offset. So it was $34,000 in negotiated wage increases, and it was offset by $12,700 in attrition.
Offset by
$12,700 of attrition. That's how you net the number down to 21.
Okay. On the, if you can recall, last year we had a conversation about the Main River Waterway Park, and I think it might have been then probably the member from Torngat who might have engaged you, and it wasn't a closed book at that time because I think you were going to look at some exploration of a recapture.
Yeah. So I think
exploration of.
Yeah. So I think I think you know, we've settled on that issue. Is in the, I shouldn't say in the past, because it'll always be an issue and we'll always monitor it. But I think our plan going forward, and this is my plan, and obviously, you know, many, many functions in the department, but I believe, from my standpoint, that the person that sits in my chair should not have the ability, and I would hope to change the regulations. So at some point in time, working with environment, that the environmental process were to continue without having a minister's ability to say, let's avoid the environmental process. The minister currently has the ability to forego the environmental process. I don't believe that's correct, personally. No. So my intention is, if I'm here long enough, to remove that ability for the minister to actually override the environmental process in the parks. You know, in other departments, you know, I'm not going to comment, but from this department's perspective, I think it's important that we balance that and make sure that we're protecting our protected areas and make sure that all due diligence is done.
I would agree too. The regulation needs to be amended, revisited. Yeah, that would be a good thing to bring. That's the regulation. That's not legislatively. That's just a regulation on.
Yeah, but as you can appreciate in a department, you know, it's a priority of ours. But you know, it's been a very challenging year administering programs, and lots of times over the past year. And this is a shout out to the department again. They've had to be very nimble and move quickly to administer programs that weren't foreseen. Absolutely.
Just a quick comment on the board of the Marble Mountain. Are there any residents from the West Coast locals that would be serving on that board?
So quite recently, we've fulfilling our obligation, the town of Steady Brook now occupied their seat on the board of Marble Mountain because they would have one. The city of Corner Brook has an appointee on the board, and it is currently on the IAC board. No, it's actually down, right?
The IAC has given
us. Yeah, so we have recent recommendations from the IAC. So we'll be completing that board, because one of the things that we've heard from the West Coast, from the gentleman sitting behind you, actually, is that we need to make sure that there's proper representation from the communities, because you know, as we move forward with any potential divestiture or sale.
Yep. Two point two oh two. The purchase services, and I know that what you had budgeted last year to what was revised is significantly more.
Yep.
And I know we've settled now in between, probably in a medium between what was budgeted to what was revised.
Yep. So your second question first, the 971 reflects additional funding for infrastructure repairs and projects. Last year, I think it was back to MHA Brown's question around investments into parks.
Yeah.
This year's balance increase that you talked about, and again, somewhat comes back to the question from MHA Brown previously, there's 666 for the installation of those accessible playgrounds that we purchased in the last fiscal year. There's 354,000 to get Butterpot Provincial Park off diesel. That will be our last provincial park on diesel, I think. I'm pretty sure Butterpot will be our last provincial. We took two provincial parks off of diesel last year, and this will take Butterpot off of diesel. There's 40,000 budgeted for Hurricane Larry damages at Butterpot. Obviously, that would likely come back in the Federal Disaster Assistance Program, but that's years away before we actually get that, so we still have to do. There would be a cost to us. And that sort of breaks down where those costs are. There's offsets here, because if you do the math on that, it's more than 422. But there's 200 or 600 reduction for projects completed, trailway work, and sorry, Bonnie, why am I? So the first phase of the Butterpot solar project is done, and some of the trailway repairs have been done.
Order, please. MHA Brown, do you still have questions under tourism?
One question.
Okay, and we'll just come back to you, MHA Party. Go ahead, MHA Brown.
Thank you, Chair. The only question I do have is about the Eagle River Park Water Parkway. Where is that to in your department?
Yeah, so there's still conversations continuously happening around Eagle River. You know, we're having conversations with at least two indigenous groups, and we have to respectfully complete those conversations, and as you can appreciate, sometimes it takes time to get that and get it done right, but it's an important piece for us to actually get Eagle River protected with the enclaves, obviously. But it's working. You can appreciate it's slow going, but it is something that's still on our, we're still committed to.
Perfect. And thank you. That's my
thank you. MHA Party, you have any further questions under that subhead?
Yep. Thank you, Chair. I don't want you to leak anything from the Rothschild report now, but would some of these parks be considered for being divested from the government?
No.
Okay. Note that.
Well, as long as I sit in this chair, I have no...
No. No, it's good.
Yeah, no.
That's the answer I was looking for.
Yeah.
Butterpot Park is solar, but I guess that's the only park that we've moved into with solar initiatives?
No, we've
several others? Loxton?
So we've done solar where we're on diesel. So the parks that didn't have availability of electricity, so we've converted
from diesel to solar in those.
Right. That so didn't we haven't have gone to solar where we had supply
electricity.
Of electricity.
Okay.
But where we've had, where the parks are running on diesel generation, we're moving to solar.
Okay, good. I think last year we discussed a little bit about the reservation system and some issues and hiccups with that. And knowing we're getting closer to camping season now, is there any change?
No, I think our reservation system. I think we've worked a lot of the hiccups out of the reservation system. I'm confident we have. And again, Carolyn, I'm not sure if you're.
Hi.
Carolyn, can you hear us? Can you hear Mr. Parker?
I
think last year we brought in the new reservation system when we revamped the website. So I haven't quite honestly heard any immediate concerns around the new reservation system. But again, we'll certainly monitor that now as we get back into that season.
Okay. That's good for me, Chair, in this section.
Thank you. Is the committee ready for the questions? Shall 2.1.01 to 2.2.02 inclusive carry? All those in favor? Those against? Carried. Can I have the next set of subheads, please, announced?
Arts and Culture, 3.1.01 to 3.1.07 inclusive.
Shall 3.1.01 to 3.1.07 inclusive carry? MHA Party.
Thank you, Chair. 3.101.
Yeah.
$500,000 increase in salaries. I say $500,000 now from what was revised last year to where.
Okay.
Yeah.
The decrease reflects reduction in staffing costs for shows due to cancellations throughout the majority of the year with COVID restrictions at the centers.
Yeah, could make sense. The purchase services increased by nearly $8 million this year. A whopping $8 million.
Very proud of that.
It's going towards
programming. Again, it's part of the $20 million investment. And there's also some infrastructure upgrades as well and some one-time capital purchases.
An example.
Jerry, the one-time capital purchases, that sound or lighting?
That was the soundboard from last year, so it's a balancing out.
Oh, okay, the soundboard.
Yeah.
Okay. And that soundboard was here in St. John's? Was it in Gander or Corner Brook?
St. John's.
Are all the arts and culture centers now open and free-flowing?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jerry.
Yes, we're back to full capacity.
Full capacity. And there are three, true? Three arts and culture centers, more.
Yeah, so.
Three big flagship ones, three large ones along the Trans-Canada?
There's six.
There's six total.
Yeah. St. John's, Gander, Grand Falls, Cornerbrook, Stephenville, Lab West.
Yes. Yep.
I exist.
No, no, that's excellent. That's good. I got to travel a little bit west more often, Jordan. 3.102, again, an increase of a quarter of a million in salaries, 3.102.
Yeah, so the increase affects the, obviously the salary plan, funding for wage increases, step increases, and right, and the Colonial Building is in there. So we're anticipating staffing at the Colonial Building.
Well, you're anticipating staffing at the,
at okay, Colonial for the Building.
Okay, yeah. What are the plans for the Colonial Building? Have we settled on anything? Now, I know we were, I think, entertaining some prospects going forward, but we haven't settled on anything yet for the Colonial Building?
So we're extremely excited to get the Colonial Building completed. Obviously, it's been a long process, very worthwhile process. So the Colonial Building, when it opens, will be a display of our, I guess, of our governance history.
Yeah.
And I look forward to the opportunity, and I'll extend this invitation to all members of here this morning into the House. As soon as it's safe to do so, we'll offer you a pre-tour to all members of the House so you can see what they've done down there, because it's an amazing restoration. And until you actually get in there and appreciate our political history, our governance history, it's quite the sight to see and understand how it interprets our history, and how it's going to become, no disrespect to the Bonavista Lighthouse, but it will quickly become our largest provincial historic site in the province, geographically. And I think it's going to be a very educational facility for people, the province, and I think it's going to be a very interesting focal point for people actually visiting the province. It's quite an amazing, I'm sure a lot of people here know the stories, but
yep,
to actually see it.
Have you done a cost analysis of that going forward, what it will cost to maintain it? And I see the value in it, and I don't misread my question to know that I do see the value.
Yeah, I think Jerry, and maybe Jerry is best to speak to this, because we are reflecting costs this year of the additional staffing, Jerry. But you know, there will be a cost to making the facility available. Jerry, do we have a number on that specifically?
We budgeted $175,000 for our operating facility, including staffing and program supports. The maintenance of the building is transportation infrastructure, so we don't budget for that or do any projections in that respect. But from an operational perspective, we feel that we're well positioned right now to open this building and open it, to the Minister's point, quite proudly.
Yeah. And I'm assuming there's no revenue to be gained from that. That's 175 on our heritage structure.
Right. It's like all the revenue from all of our provincial historic sites.
Yes.
Revenue goes into general revenue.
Yeah.
We don't get, and we carry the cost, but the Treasury takes the gate.
But do you envision revenue? I'm saying it'll come in, so you're going to have a fee that it would.
Oh
go
yeah,
in
no, there. No, there would be a fee associated. The same with the rest of our provincial historic sites. There would be an entry fee.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. $5.6 million in allowances and assistance. In the revised budget of last year. 09 is that line there.
Yep. So that's the artist support program. So last year we did two iterations of the artist support program to support our artists as we went through COVID. So there were 1,212 artists who actually benefited from that program in 2021-2022. And again, there was $5.6 million distributed.
$3.103 million. You got the grants and subsidies there, and I assume, is that all for Arts NL would take that and they would just
yep. So we
disperse
we,
it?
Absolutely. So that's okay. Just our direct grant to Arts NL. There was a small increase this year, and that just reflects some wage increases.
Okay. 3.104. There's an increase of $130,000 in the grants and subsidies to the rooms from the budget last year to this year.
And again, that reflects, negotiated wage increases. And there's I think the negotiated wage increases were $181,000, but it's offset by $34,000 in attrition and operational expense reductions.
Okay, so you had stated the attrition last year was $17,000. I think it was $17,000 what was stated last year for the...
So this year's at 34.
$34,000. We had an increase of $7.5 million expenditure last year? Or an increase... What contributed to the... that's what you just referenced, but the...
Well, there's a 1.3 increase, right?
Yes.
So that is... there's some funding in there for the Colonial Building because they manage the Colonial Building restoration for us. Fair, Jerry? The Financial Administration.
So
they work for us on the Colonial Building.
Okay. $3.105. I'm assuming the list of those receiving the grants and subsidies under the Heritage Foundation of NL would be in the binder, Minister?
If not, it would be on their website, right? They're similar to ART. They would be the same as ARTS NL. We don't administer their...
They disperse.
We're not involved in their disbursement. I know with ARTS NL, their disbursement is readily available on their website, and I would think ARTS or Heritage NL wouldn't be any different, I would think.
Okay. 3.106. Celebrate NL, Inc.
Yep.
And I'm assuming that's the come home year.
It is, but it's come home year and beyond.
Okay.
We see a role. We see a role for Celebrate NL as we move forward in event attraction. This agency will work with our local DMOs, but also with. Destination Canada. We see the role for Celebrate NL to be things like the announcement yesterday around NASCAR.
Okay.
It's really about developing partnerships, and it gives us an added amount of flexibility when it comes to partnerships.
So Celebrate NL, Inc.
Yes.
That is the department?
I would have tabled a report yesterday on Celebrate NL.
Yeah.
Celebrate NL is an incorporation,
yeah.
But it resides in the department. The structure is within the department. You would find similar organizations in six other jurisdictions in Canada. Adds flexibility, and it really adds an opportunity for us for partnership that we normally wouldn't have as a line department.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister, and thank you, MHA Party. 3.1.01 to 3.1.07, MHA Brown, and when MHA Brown finishes his questions, we'll break for 10.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is, do I get to sit on the couches in the Colonial Building? Am I allowed to sit on the couches?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Minister.
As soon as they're completed, I was looking forward to this question because I might have a quote or two here from John Fisher. But no, I won't get into that.
I do appreciate the invitation, and I will take you up on that offer.
No, absolutely. And quite frankly, you do get to sit on the couches. And also, quite frankly, the couches, if I'm correct, came in just a little bit above estimates. There was no surprise to us at the cost. Proudly, one of the things we found, and I'm going to take liberty now that you opened the door, one of the things that we found in the restoration of the Colonial Building, and we're very proud of it, is the amount of heritage carpenters that we are building in you know, creating in this province, because it's a very specialized trade. This is not a piece of furniture, and you'll see it others when you go into Colonial Building, and if you look at other successful region of the province when it comes to restoration, it's very skilled.
Oh yeah,
to do this work. So.
Oh yeah, and I guess it acted as a kind of a gateway for apprenticeship for a lot of people in this province now to hone their craft.
Absolutely, and it's being done by a Newfoundland company, which in a lot of the restoration, I forget the numbers. Jerry could probably rhyme them off, but we were really pleased that as the Colonial Building has come along over the last decade, that we were able to find the expertise here in this province to actually do the heritage carpenter work that I think in the early days it was anticipated that this work would primarily be done by outside companies, but it hasn't been. We've okay. found the expertise
no,
here in the province.
That's actually really good to hear about, because I know it's not easy to find something like that, but it's great that we learned from that. Heritage sites right now operating, are we putting any money back in other than the Colonial Building? Are we looking at any upgrades or extra work or anything to the restoration heritage sites across the province?
So we were fortunate enough last year in preparation for Come Home Year. Someone's going to tell me a line here in a second. We were very fortunate last year to actually be able to secure some additional funding through savings throughout the year to do some work. We've done work at Commissariat House. We've done some work in Point of Moore with the lighthouse. We completed an engineering study in Heart's Content around coastal erosion. We completed an engineering study at the Bonavista Lighthouse. So we were able last year to do that. And again, through that $20 million this year, we're going to continue on. Asking you will receive. So yes, and I guess to continue on from last year's investment, this year, again, through the $20 million, we were able to secure additional investment for phase two of the structural repairs to the Cape Bonavista Lighthouse, phase two of the repairs to the Trinity Mercantile Building, shoreline and building upgrades at the Heart's Content Cable Station, exhibit cases at the Colonial Building, and phase two of the building upgrades at the Mark Bager presentation. So we'll see continued phase two work this year at those sites in provincial historic sites.
Yeah, last summer, myself and my family, we played tourists, and then we actually tried to get to as many historic, we had our punch card. We tried to get to every historic place we could possibly go. We did pretty good. Actually, I even darted out his way and actually had a really good time out there. So, they are fantastic resources in this province, and I think more people locally should appreciate them because they're fantastic. But my question is, is there any anticipation of adding any more historic sites to the roster?
No, I don't think there are. Obviously, we'd always take suggestion of provincial historic sites. But I think, you know, first and foremost is we need to find a way to continue our commitment to the ones we have.
Okay.
And I can tell you, it's been challenging, and we've been lucky in the last 2 years to find a way to actually get some money in, and the continuation again this year to get some phase two work done on some big projects. I think the Bonavista project this year is somewhere in the vicinity of $1 million.
Okay, yeah.
Is that much work required?
Yeah, and that's right. They are very old, fragile buildings and sites, so I can expect they get a little expensive. But I just thought I'd ask. Another question to do is the Newfoundland Labor Arts Council. I know in the last number of years, you guys did increase the budget item for them. But is there been a complete review of their actual need and what X number extra dollars might put them in a new tier that they can do something that actually probably would generate more revenue? Have we ever bothered to take them and review what they do and what possibilities they could do with extra budgeting?
So they have a very, very strong board.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would think that they're constantly looking for ways to leverage their funding, and I think they do a very good job of that. And now more than ever, and it's very, I think it's sadly ironic that, and in a good way, that, you know, we've increased our funding to $5 million at some of the worst time for them.
Yeah.
You know, for artists, you know, there was an additional $5 million this last year in the artist support program. So it was very important right now that we were there to continue to support for artists. In my opening remarks, I talked about, you know, of the $4 million that we've allocated through the Cultural Economic Development Program for Come Home Year, over $2 million of that, again, is going directly to artists in their fees. So, you know, we're committed to artists, you know, going forward, because they're such a piece of the tourism fabric in this province. So.
I know, and I just, because I know sometimes, like you said, you give them $5 million, but if we have 501, we could do this. Or
so,
like,
yeah,
that kind
I don't
of thing,
think, right? I don't, to my understanding, I'm sure any organization would always say we could take more, but we've grown it to $5 million from, I think, what was two, Jerry? What was two a few years back in very, very, you know, very tight economic times, but I think that's a reflection, again, of how much they actually contribute to the economy.
Absolutely. The Rooms Corporation, anything on the horizon for the Rooms? Are we looking at any other projects there, or any, you know, anything new or developing that we're...
So you're going to see some presentations this summer from the Rooms around Come Home Year. They have a series of activities that they're going to undertake for us. There may be a Rooms partnership or two coming. One of the things we were able to do last year was we actually, the Rooms typically get $75,000 a year for art acquisition. We were able last year, as we moved through COVID, to find an additional $75,000 for them for art acquisition last year. That acquisition had a primary focus on Indigenous art. We have some stuff that we will talk about in the coming days about the Rooms and their role that they're going to play in Come Home Year.
Perfect. The Heritage Foundation of Newfoundland and Labrador, soft spot for me. I used to be with the Heritage Society in Labrador. Have we ever did a review of their actual funding or anything that we could actually increase to probably preserve more heritage in this province? I know that there's been a big push outside of there about oral history and stuff like that, preserving that. Is there anything that we're looking at to maybe help them achieve that goal of collecting all our oral heritage?
Yeah. Well, I think what you would find is through our Come Home Year community and cultural program, there is additional heritage funding this year, things that will have a long-lasting value. Heritage is a tough one. There's no doubt about it. I'd be the first one to say that, in the way that it's harder to quantify heritage at lots of times than it is arts, as an example. But, you know, it's extremely important to us to maintain those, that the heritage, if you think about the Rooms, you know, the Rooms is a big collector of our heritage. If you think about our provincial historic sites, they capture our heritage. But, you know, we're always open to suggestions.
All right, perfect. And Celebrity NL Inc. How is that formed? Is that going to be? Is that a agency, a board, or commission? Like, where does it fall in?
So it'll be a, I guess, for want of a better text. Yeah. I don't want anybody to get visions of grandeur here now. It'll be a crown corporation that'll be housed within the department.
Okay.
That will allow us an ability, again, as I said a moment ago, partnerships, flexibility. I guess if you look at the iterations of it in different jurisdictions, it's for want of a better word, you could call it a provincial DMO. Right?
So like Destination Canada, we're having...
The role of Celebrate Now will be to work with Destination Canada, to work with the NASCARs of the world or other events that we want to attract, because we were very successful... I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago, in attracting, if you think back to the Briar, the Junos, those type of events, and they bring tremendous opportunity.
We're expanding that now.
Yeah, we're going to be very active again in the event attraction market.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, and I'd just ask the committee members to hold their thoughts and their questions until we finish our break. Caroline, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay, you can put the kettle on and get yourself a tea biscuit. We're going to be...
Oh, you can hear Caroline, can you?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, put it in your earpiece, Steve. So, Caroline, you can put on the kettle. We'll
sorry,
be
Caroline.
Back in 10.
That's okay. Thanks.
You.
I'll put the kettle on.
So we'll break for 10, please. Okay, thank you.
back with MHA Priority for 3.1.01 to 3.1.07 inclusive. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to make just one comment on the chairs at the Colonial Building, because I think I may have been quoted in the media at that time as saying, you know, out in front about those, the cost of those chairs. The contention at that time, and I understand the fact that you would look at it, and we want to create a capacity for heritage carpentry, and I know that we value every heritage carpenter that we've got in Trinity and Bonavista and all those areas. The only contention that I had made at that time was the fact that maybe there is existing Victorian era furniture that's out there that we could get. And I know that I had sent along to the department one lady who was selling a piece of furniture for a cost of $1,000. I had passed that along to the department to inform the department that it did exist, and the picture was wonderful to investigate. But I think the investigation was going to occur during the summertime, and it might have been a seasonal employee or someone's going to go out and check out what it was. Well, I would think it was a business person then who bought it in Clarenville, this piece of Victorian era furniture, and what a wonderful piece of furniture it was. So my only contention at that wasn't to be on the opposition side, was the fact that you'd almost explore to see what was out there. Was it ever conceivable during the riot that there might still be existing furniture that belonged there?
I'm just going to turn around. A resident historian, the man that if anybody ever needs a history lesson or whatever, and I've known a lot of people know a lot about history and Victorian furniture and all that fun stuff, and this guy does this for fun. Jerry Osmond.
Thank you, Minister.
Talking about being put on the spot, eh, Jerry?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the chairs that we are developing and building, they're custom-made for the spaces. So it's not a matter of taking existing Victorian furniture and putting in the spaces. The spaces are quite unique. If you haven't been in the building, the offices are quite small and the chambers are quite large. So they're designed for the spaces, designed for the time period that we're restoring it to specifically. So that's why procuring a piece is not as simple as taking someone's Victorian furniture and putting it in the space. The pieces that we are building are part of that strategy. In terms of what was left from the ride or left from other parts of the building, this building's a funny story in that its maintenance is very poorly documented. Probably the most poorly documented maintenance of a heritage building, I would say, anywhere. And that's partly why, you know, it's taken us so long to restore this building, because of the unknowns and the lack of documentation on what has been done and what's there. Furniture-wise, we still have the clerk's table, we still have the speaker's chair, we still have podiums from the House of Assembly, 40 of them. So we have an inventory of furniture from that building that we are going to put back in the building. But other pieces have come and gone over the years, disappeared. Some have been left in the building. I know when I first got involved in the project 13 years ago, the House of Assembly was full of furniture that didn't belong in the building. Yeah. It was just stored there, so we had to relocate that furniture. Some went to Harbor Grace Courthouse at the time. It was more judicial history of furniture. So it's a complicated process, but to your question about the riot, a lot of things left the building during the riot, Prime Minister included.
Jerry, thanks so much. You think sometimes when you engage in conversation, and when you do, you find your little tidbits of information that stick and make an impression upon you. I can't recall in the past when this broke in the media, custom made for spaces, because that would have been a significant factor.
Yeah.
If I can understand that, and my mind is going now to say, listen, every piece is not going to fit what space you've got to create it for. That I can relate to, but I don't know if I missed that back in the time.
And listen, it's all good. And I didn't truly, to your point about the space, I didn't truly appreciate it until the first time I went down there, and I walked, got up on the second floor, and I walked into, and I knew we had a green chamber and a red chamber, but I forgot that we had a Senate. We were the Parliament of
Parliament of Canada, you know, green chamber, red chamber. And when you go in, you walk in and you see the floors were painted, you know, one chamber of the floor was painted red and the other chamber of the floor was painted green. You really get appreciation for, and I tell you, anybody, I'm assuming everybody in this chamber, you know, has some affection to government and politics. But when you go in down there and see the way we've restored it and the way it's been restored, it's quite, it's quite wonderful.
Whatever we embark upon, we need to do it right.
Absolutely.
And that's the bottom line. Whether it's a new school construction, do it right and do it with vision to know that where we're going to be. But that all comes from the people sitting down and for those on the outside understanding what that vision and what that plan would exist. You had mentioned, and just before I conclude, Mr. Chair, the you had mentioned about the artists, the musicians, and they're amongst our, well, probably amongst our greatest assets that we've got in this province. There is no doubt about that. One thing that in the limited travel that I've done, I've always looked and compared to what we have on the island compared to where I may be at that particular time. And in my own analysis, no comparison. So when we talked about what we have and marketing what we have, there's no doubt for the musicians and the heritage structures to be included, Minister, as you had stated, to be out in front. But we've got lots that we can certainly market to make this place an attractive destination for others.
So I think, and I'm going to take liberty for a second, just, and if you think about, and I think our marketing agency hit the nail on the head this year as we recover from COVID. If you look at the campaign this year, Leave No Song Unsung.
Yeah.
It's a play on bucket list, but it's also a play on what we have. And what we have that other provinces don't have. I would argue that there's very few places, I don't know if there's anywhere in North America, that has a cultural artist industry piece that we have. And I think, you know, we need to elevate it to to the level that it needs to be at, because I think it's how we sell ourselves going forward.
And I'd add storytellers.
Absolutely.
One thing as an MHA, just going around in my own district, that I find, and I've discovered some wonderful storytellers. And I know that that's a tribute that we've had on, you know, as a culture and as a group on the island.
And I think if we were to vote here in the House of Assembly, you would probably qualify as the best storyteller, because there's very, 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 very clearly when you speak, you often tell a story. So I would congratulate you as being the number one storyteller in the House.
My mother used to always say, one of my faults. I talk too much. Mr. Chair, that concludes.
Thank you, and I assume you're finished as well, MHA Brown. Thank you. So if the committee is ready for the question, shall 3.1.01 to 3.1.07 carry? All those in favor? Those against? Carried. Can I ask the clerk to call the next set of subheads, please?
Film, television, and recreation, 4.1.01 to 4.2.03 inclusive.
Shall 4.1.01 to 4.2.03 inclusive carry, MHA party?
Thank you, Chair. Newfoundland Film Development Corporation, son of a Critch. But season, this is the end of the season,
tonight.
The last show.
Yep.
Tonight. There's a lot to get excited about when we look at the productions that occur here. And I keep defaulting back to one in my head around as far as the cost-benefit analysis to where we are. And we can throw numbers out, we can talk about this or that, and you say, well, listen, but people need to be informed as to where we are and how it generates the money of which we desire. And I would say to you that we would capture the vast majority of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians if we had the ability to be able to disclose as to what we do. And I know the sensitivity in that, and I know that I think to say, well, there's only so much you could disclose, or some you probably can't, because it might value in any negotiations or what you would have on going forward. But it would be sure nice to see an in-depth cost-benefit analysis off this industry. And remember, if we're going to invest in an equity stake, we know where we stood with not investing in an equity stake in offshore oil and gas. I think this particular government is out with any oil and gas back in some time that they weren't going to invest in an equity stake. That was my understanding. The only thing when the film industry is one that we've delved into. So the only thing I would say in that, that would be nice to have, as complicated as it is, but at least to make some efforts to know that we can better communicate the benefits financially for the province. So we commit $10 million annually
yes.
to the film industry. That's our commitment.
That's the equity stake. So you meant, you know, I'll just give you a few that we would have taken equity in last year. We would have taken equity, obviously, in Son of a Critch, Hudson and Rex,
yep.
Sur Real Estate, Astrid and Lily. There's also a subset of I guess smaller smaller pictures. To your point, it's very hard in lots of ways to quantify the spend of the industry, and there's no real way to quantify what it actually contributes to other industries. And I'll give you a prime example. Rock Solid Builds. Anybody who watches Rock Solid Builds on Thursday nights and again at 10 a.m., 10:30 on Saturday morning, that's when I watch it because I'm not up that late on Thursday night. But if you look at Rock Solid Builds is a one-hour ad twice a week for this province. There's no way to ever quantify what Rock Solid Builds is doing, or to the tourism industry, or the intro to Hudson and Rex, you know, when the drone or whatever comes in over St. John's Harbor. So you're right, it's really hard to quantify. We're very proud of where we've gotten with the industry. If, you know, we haven't seen it yet, but if you look at the cover this year of our tourism guide, the cover of our tourism guide this summer is Cape St. Mary's. And the reason we chose Cape St. Mary's this year is it's going to get the play when Disney releases Peter Pan and Wendy. We're going to see the you know, Newfoundland and Labrador in Peter Pan and Wendy is Neverland. And we need to leverage that as much as Disney will allow us to leverage. You know, obviously, yeah, it's Disney. They're not exactly going to roll over for us. But, you know, and, you know, you would have seen it last summer in your district, the economic benefit,
yeah.
the what that does, and what it'll mean for years to come. Because when you see the scenes of that movie of, you know, Wendy landing in Neverland, you know, she's landing out in Dungeon Park. Is it Dungeon?
Cape Bonavista. Yeah, Dungeon.
Yeah. You know, so people will ask, where is that?
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to find ways to market that. But to your point, it's very hard to quantify. We do our best to quantify it. But we're confident that it's a strong investment and will pay dividends for years to come. I think if you were to ask the owners of the Duke of Duckworth, are they still benefiting from Republic of Doyle, which is what? 10,
yep.
15 years ago? Still yes. People going to the Duke of Duckworth because it was
yep.
the bar
yep.
on Republic of Doyle 15 years yep. ago, whenever.
My last note on that, I know it's difficult to quantify,
yep.
but I know that we can probably do enough to quantify it enough to give substance to people to know that, listen,
yeah.
this is bringing a return.
Yeah, and we've been trying yep. by actually getting out to sets and inviting media to sets, because when you get on a set, and I don't know if you've had the opportunity, but
no.
if you haven't, we can certainly arrange for you and MHA Brown sometime this coming season, to take in a set, and you'll get a much deeper appreciation
yeah.
for what it is. Everything from catering to the carpenter to the electrician, because there's a great opportunity here for tradespeople, right? And, yeah. and it's a very... very unionized industry that pays good wages.
Money.
Yeah.
When Moya Green stated in a report that the was 48,000, I think, was the cost per actor that would be to the island, but I guess that's what she was assuming, but she didn't look at what the benefits would be?
I don't accept that Moya
figure.
Green's
yep.
figure and impact to the industry. And, you know, I think, you know, one thing about the Green Report, and I think we've been clear from day one, is, you know, we all take advice, but again, we'll make the decisions on what we feel is right. And again, I respectfully disagree on our take on that industry.
Okay, but she mentioned, I think, the lack of return from past productions, and she. But I don't know how much analysis, but we're all back to quantifying again
no,
for
absolutely.
People to know.
And it's a very
so,
tough.
We were all hinged in the public in Newfoundland and Labrador and Labradorians looking at from when PERT was coming out because we knew how significant it was when it comes out, and then she throws this out.
Yeah.
And here we are looking at an industry which you got a lot of confidence in, and I
absolutely.
Think most of us do, to enjoy. Then all of a sudden you can see how conflicting people are.
Yeah, no,
right?
Absolutely. It leads to, I guess, a skepticism. And I think it's incumbent on all of us, because I think we all believe in the industry. I seen skepticism yesterday around the NASCAR announcement. And every time we do one of these things, it's a skepticism. But again, the revenue that's generated from these operations and the jobs is what helps pay for a lot of the services that we need in the province.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. In 4.201, in the grants and subsidies, and I'm assuming maybe I have that now listed here. The listing, so we've got 10 million?
Yep. Oh, yes. Sorry, Danny.
I should probably, 4.201, Minister, and Section 10.
4.201?
Yeah.
Under Sport and Rec,
Minister. 4.201, Sport and Rec, yes, sir.
And grants and subsidies, Section 10
yep.
there. Yeah.
So, the 925 reflects adjustments for the 2025 Canada Summer Games funding. The increase of $1 million offset by forecast adjustments of $75,000 for funding. And there is some funding in here in 2022-2023 for biannual Newfoundland and Labrador Games regional qualifiers. So where we've had to delay the games in Bay Roberts and the games in Gander, we've reached agreements with the host committees for both games to actually do some regional qualifiers for them in their prospective towns and regions to actually offset some of the disruption and prepare for their games, which will be in 2020. Both games will be in 2024. So Bay Roberts and Gander, someone throw something at me if I'm wrong, but both games, Bay Roberts and Gander, will now be in 2024.
Can you speak to the revenues there in that same section, 0102 there, the $378,000 federal money, or the federal contribution?
Do you have that, Bonnie? Yeah, I'll turn that one over to Bonnie.
Okay.
That's the funding for the federal bilateral agreement on sport participation.
Okay, all right. And the revenue from the provincial revenue? It's $337,500. I know it was down during COVID, but I'm assuming that's revenue that we take in from...
The pools.
Oh, from the pools. Okay. Strictly the pools, because the other athletic structures we have, like Crosby Road and that, you wouldn't... There is
so,
no revenue coming from those.
Crosby Road operates as a board, so Crosby Road just gets its operating grant from us.
Okay, just pools alone. Okay, good. I got 45 seconds, and that might end. I'm not... If we're going to become the country's healthiest population in 2030, I don't think the physical activity tax provision that we've got in is really going to cut that. It'd be nice to see a vision as to how we're going to achieve it, if it is going to be a plan, and that may not be your department.
It's not.
But you're part of it.
Absolutely. And I think that's why, from our perspective in the department, and, you know, we see ourselves in the health accord, to your point. Obviously, we don't have that tax credit. But, I would have, I think in my opening remarks, I alluded to the investment through what we did just at the end of last fiscal year with Active NL. And that program was oversubscribed, but a tremendous amount of interest around around trails. Trails do two things. They help us get out and be healthier ourselves, but we've also found, again, and we've heard this from the industry, our market, our tourism, our non-resident market, one of the things they're looking for is trails.
Yes.
You would see it, obviously, in your region. Totally. And we see a focus there. And one of the things that we will focus on going forward through, you know, the Community Healthy Living Program or an Active NL program will be trail development, because people want trail development. And it sort of gets at two things in one. It offers up a very low-cost activity for residents, and it offers up a tourism product for non-residents that they're looking for.
Thank you, Minister. MHA Brown, 4.1.01 to 4.2.03 inclusive.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a couple questions there. The first is, can I get a list of the companies who benefited from the NL Film Development Corporation and the dollar amounts each company received?
You mean production company?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something we can certainly give you.
Perfect. Yeah. I really appreciate that, and I do want to echo my colleague's thing that, and I agree with what you said too, that the film and television industry in this province has, I know COVID, you know, took the legs out from underneath it for a little while, but even leading up to this, we've been on a steady increase of obviously production and stuff like that. Republic Doyle was probably one of the biggest breakthrough ones we had in this province, and now we're. Was it, we're filming, what, triple what we were doing in that time area?
Absolutely. We, if you look at this coming season, you know, with the commitment, Hudson and Rex has an expanded schedule in 2022. In 2022. Son of a Critch was just extended. We have some other things happening in 2022. In the budget last week, Minister Cody would have announced the all-spend tax and all-spend tax credit. That's very important when we look at attracting motion picture work. Obviously, you know, there's no spend associated with the all-spend tax credit unless we actually get people here.
Yeah, that's right.
It opens up the all-spend tax credit gives us, I guess, a tool in our toolbox that we never had before, and it attracts a different industry other than our local production industry. This would be more of a motion picture type industry, series, show of the week kind of stuff. But and there's considerable interest for that out there as well. But tremendous opportunities.
Now, I know you probably can't disclose, but has there been more people knocking at your door about filming in this province in the last year or so?
Absolutely, because we've been knocking at their doors.
Okay.
So we're doing both. So we, sat down back in November, I think, along with the Premier, met with the Motion Picture Association of Canada. I think subsequent to that meeting, you know, we had follow-up meetings with some of the major studios, and, you know, we will certainly entertain their knocks on our door, but we're also going to be banging on theirs.
Okay, perfect. I'm glad to hear. And I really appreciate that. Over on the recreation side, I know this... I think this probably comes up every time we meet or never did. In Labrador West and Happy Valley Goose Bay and the North and South Coast especially, traveling for competition, it's getting really expensive. We're hosting the provincial Adam hockey in Labrador West, but we can only get, I think it was four teams to travel up there to actually participate. It seems to be getting harder and harder with the increased cost of travel for... say residents of the island to travel to Labrador to compete, or residents from Labrador to go to the island to compete. Something needs to be reviewed there. It is getting really considerably expensive, and fundraising, especially during COVID and stuff, has, you know, become a lot more harder. And I know there used to be a program years ago about helping people travel to and from the different geographic regions of the province, but it is getting a lot harder. And I just wonder if something for consideration your department is go back and look into is trying to get sport teams to meet again, basically.
Yeah, we can certainly take that away. That's and appreciate you raising it, because it's not something that, you know, I'll be honest, wasn't top of mind, but something that we can certainly go back and have a look at, because it does certainly warrant some investigation. Because one of the things we wanted to do was make sure, and especially leading into the opportunities we have in 2020. Well, obviously we have we'll be sending teams to Niagara Falls in early August for the Canada Summer Games. We'll be sending teams again to Prince Edward Island for the Winter Games in winter of 2023. 2024, we have both our Summer Games, and in 2025, we'll host the Canada Summer Games. So we have a lot of opportunities here for sports activity in the province over the next 3 or 4 years. And it's important that people from no matter which corner of the province they live have an opportunity to be a part of that if they so desire, and if they can, you know,
they need
equal
train.
Opportunity to make these teams.
They need to train, and they also have to meet in person to train. And something that continuously gets raised in my community is especially where we have a massive amount of young people playing hockey these days. It's there's a lot of hockey teams up our way. One other thing is too is obviously, and I'm sure you're aware, is there any room to take on another recreation facility into the program right now, as you've seen that ours had to close because of funding issues?
You know, the quick answer is, you know, obviously.
I'll call you.
there's, you know, really, we have, it's interesting, cause we have these conversations on multiple levels when it comes to when we talk about who actually takes the responsibility for recreational assets. Maybe we can have a conversation about what's happening there and is, you know, what.
There's there gotta be some kind of strategy. But anyway, I appreciate it. But other than that, that's my all my questions for this section. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, MHA Brown. Do you have anything further, MHA Party?
Follow the points.
Thank you.
Before concluding, the minister had stated about the value of the walking trails, and he referenced our district. I had asked the Visitor Information Center, the lady who works in Clarenville, by far the greatest number of questions and queries that they get when they stop in there is the hiking trails that would be in the peninsula. And I found that surprising when I first heard it, because that wouldn't have been number one on my list. I would think some others that probably would have, but she says by far the majority are the walking trails within the district.
East Coast Trails tell us, and it's, you know, obviously it's been 2016 since we had a full exit survey, and this is why we need to get our, you know, we can't put a strong enough focus on research, in my opinion, because we have to understand what's happening. But, you know, the East Coast Trails will tell us that they are one of the greatest creators of travel to the East Coast of this province. Is when people come here, that's one of the things they want to do, and we see it throughout the province. Trailway development is on fire. We need to harness it. We need to make sure we market it properly. It has great opportunities around season extension, because hiking is great in the fall or great in the spring. And one of the things in the $20 million that we're committed to doing this year as well is working with regions of the province that have season extension, because we know typically, we're going to be very strong in July and August, but we need to start selling, you know, September, October, November. For the west coast of the province, we need to start selling January, February, and early March or March. tremendous capacity not being used, unfortunately, in lots of cases, 9 months of the year.
Just two other quick points. When we talk about the wellness, I think we have a school that serves every portion of our population on the island. How we utilize the school gymnasium for whether it be seniors to come in to have walking programs that would be ongoing for wellness issues, that would be something substantive. The better utilization of our schools that are scattered all over the island that will reach everybody. we've got seniors that can't get access to the schools. Like to have programs going to walking, but they don't have it, again, because it's not cut and dry. It's probably supporting what needs to be done or relaxing some regulatory that would be there. But I mentioned that here just to be on the record to know that that is a big miss. It would be in the District of Bonavista, and I think you may have referenced the utilization of these schools and these facilities across the island in the past, if I didn't. So I just wanted to be on the record for that. And the last thing I have, which before I pass it over to you, the Minister, would be we've always had a legacy piece in every games that we've had. I think we have. You know, I've had the benefit of working many years at the Summer Games Complex in Clarenville, part of our gymnasium, three gymnasiums in one, and what programming we could offer as a result of that facility. And I know we could have quantified it better, but I think most would see, but the tournaments we hosted and so on, is there anything that would be planned as far as a legacy piece in the upcoming games?
I guess to your questions, I couldn't agree more on schools. Not every community have one, but we have 260
serving a region.
Totally.
If they're not in a community, they're serving a region.
Totally. So we have. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. They're underutilized. I don't know how we get there at some point in time, but I think we got to get there. I know I've had conversations with the Minister of Education, even around come home year, because a lot of our communities, that's the largest facility they have. And, you know, we've had conversations and encouraging ones with the minister around, specifically around come home year and allowing communities to have access to gymnasiums, right? And couldn't agree more. Canada Summer Games, yeah, there are discussions we're having. I meet with the Canada Summer Games Committee every second Tuesday, or the co-chairs of the Summer Games Committee, regular conversations with them and the city, you know, exploring options. We know... I don't think it's any secret that we know there's a piece of work that needs to be done around tennis. So I think, you know, we'll get there. And we also know that there's a piece of work needs to be done around athletics. And I said this, I think, when we announced about a year ago, when we formally announced the games, you look at the ACRA Arena, which was a legacy piece from the 77.
Yeah.
I was only a boy. even though that's a legacy piece of the 77 games, there's going to be significant investment in that, in renewing that facility. So there will be a legacy, I would argue, of the ACRA Arena.
Yeah.
Just to bring it back, because I would say it might have been 77 the last time there was a substantial investment into the ACRA Arena. So, but yes, we have that conversation. I think if you were to speak to the co-chairs of the Canada Summer Games, both of them are they very much want us to leave legacy of those games. Because to your point, all games, all activities leave a legacy. I look in my own district, if I look at the benefits of Carbonera and Harbor Grace actually hosting the Newfoundland Labrador Summer Games, I think, twice. You know, the track facilities in Carbonera, work that was done to improve the pool. 2024 games in Bay Roberts will have a legacy, and it'll support infrastructure around. I think Gander will have actually the only, at this point in time, the only 400-meter track in the province will be in Gander.
Again.
So, you know, these games have a benefit beyond the games themselves.
Yes. Yep.
Thank you. You're okay? Thank you, MHA Brown and Party. So if the committee's ready for the question, shall 4.1.01 to 4.2.03 carry? All those in favor? Those against? Carried.
The total?
Shall the total carry? All those in favor? Those against? Carried. Shall I report the estimates of the Department of Tourism, Culture, Arts and Recreation? Carried without amendment. All those in favor? Those against? Carried. I will turn it to MHA Party for just a short closing remark, if you would like.
Thank you to the Chair and desk staff for the session. Since becoming an MHA in 2019, one of the more exciting parts of the learning curve I've embarked upon are these estimate proceedings is when you really get to know the expertise that would be in our department and the knowledge of which they hold. I've often contended that when I look at our province as far as soliciting from outside of our domain dollars or funds in order to complete studies about our plight, that we need not be doing that, knowing that the expertise that we've got within our province. And I thank you for your participation today, for your great work on behalf of the residents of Newfoundland and Labrador. And the minister, if I can just, would love to have a copy of your introductory comments, which you said you would.
Oh, absolutely. You'll get a copy of everything once. It'll be on stick, though, because we're saving paper.
Yeah.
That's how we keep that line
item
down.
That's not on this one, is it? No, just not his opening comments.
Oh, yes. Right. No, sorry. Yes, yeah. We're trying to keep... That's how we keep those... Remember those office supplies you were talking about? We just drive up the office supplies in the office of the official opposition when you print.
Thank you. Thank you, MHA Party. MHA Brown?
I want to thank the minister and his staff there. Yes, thank you for this. It was great to have a conversation. It looks very, you know, positive going forward, and that's fantastic. And it seems like we're ready for the coming tourism season and that. And I look forward to coming back now and seeing how everything panned out over this past year. And it's really nice to see that the film and television industry is. Seems like is on fire right now, so we should I'd like to hear a bit more about that. And I do take the minister up on his offer to go and tour one of those sets when the opportunity is correct, because I would like to see how that is playing out right now in this province. So thank you all. Thank you for all your input, and I look forward to sitting on that couch in the Colonial Building.
Thank you. Thank you, MHA Brown. Before I call for an adjournment, Minister, the privilege is yours to end the meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. You won't get the first. Won't be the first person to sit on it, because I'm aiming for that. Because I can only imagine that when I tweet that picture out, the response. But I may just do it anyway. listen. Thanks. I just want to. You know, I thanked the staff earlier, and the executive that's here with me this morning. But thank the entire staff in the department, because there's a tremendous amount of work that goes into preparations for estimates, and there's a tremendous amount of work that the staff, that a lot of whom are behind the scenes, have done in the last year, whether it's the Tourism Hospitality Support Program, the Artist Support Program, pushing out programs into the end of the fiscal year on tight timelines, but there's been a lot of work done. The industry is resilient. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank people like Hospitality Newfoundland and Labrador and the Premier's Advisor Council on Tourism, the work that they've done to help guide us to recovery. I think we're well on the way to that recovery, but I would caution everybody that we still have a lot of work to do, and we're certainly in this department and our government is committed to doing that work in the coming months and years to rebuild this industry, not only back to the $1.12 or the $1.2 billion that it brings into the province, but beyond. Because I truly believe, and we've only literally scratched the surface of what tourism can be in this province. And back to MHA Party's remarks earlier about our culture and our arts, that's what we have that we can sell that's unique to anybody in this world. And quite frankly, we bring in a tourist that typically has a high spending threshold, and it's important that we continue to work with that tourist. And it's also important as we go into come home year, we get our visiting friends and relatives back in the province. And I can tell you from every indication that we've seen, that's going to happen. I referenced earlier, Marine Atlantic at a 10-year high in reservations and optimism going into this year. And again, thanks for the opportunity. It's great to do estimates.
Thank you, Minister. And before I adjourn, again, I want to thank the committee and Minister and his department and our staff here this morning. And I would ask for a mover for adjournment, MHA Brown. Our next meeting will be at the call of the chair. Thank you very much for your participation this morning, and have a great day.